financial literacy, and the human condition. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Rahm.
Hi, it's Frances. I just wanted to take a minute to thank you for watching this video. If you're catching us on YouTube, please help us help others by clicking like, subscribe, and all notifications so you don't miss any videos. And check back for the next video. I think you're going to love it. Thanks again. For more information, you can visit us at hugyourmoney.com.
Welcome to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Rahm. Hi.
Surprise. We had planned a totally different show for this morning, and we got into a conversation, you and I thought, you know, we really should do this if you are willing to share your story with us. So, so Jess and I have worked together now for, I don't know, three or four years. It's been a while. And I know that radio is a difficult business, and not unlike other things where you might have to relocate often. So Jess has relocated a lot. So I thought it would be interesting to just hear the sort of changes you've had to make in your career, where you've had to move, why, and what that does to your wallet, to your emotions. Can you give us any advice that might help people who have to relocate often?
Well, when I started off in radio, I started off at WHAI in Greenfield, Mass, doing a little bit of news. And then I got asked to go down to Springfield. The late, great Phil D. I don't know if you remember Phil D.
Sure, he was the Wiz, which is now your Pure Oldie station in Greenfield.
Yeah.
With Jay Dean
Loved
on it.
Phil
absolutely.
D. Mm-hmm. Yep. And I worked with Jay Dean when I very first started. I used to go get his coffee at Dunkin' all the time in the morning for the morning show because I would do the overnights.
Nice
but I
guy.
Went down to Springfield. Wonderful. And I was there for 10 years. And it was great because I grew up in Western Mass. I'm a Hilltown kid. I grew up in the Hilltowns. Mm-hmm. So I was in Springfield for 10 years, which was great because this is my area. This is where all my family and friends are. But then the way radio works, there's budget cuts all the time. It's just not a secure field. They can make changes. They can switch formats. Anything can happen. So I got let go in Springfield and went down to Providence for 5 years. Again, this was the first kind of big move I had made, but it was still okay because I could drive home. But I will say that's when I ran into my first financial obstacle, because usually when you get hired in a new place, they'll give you somewhat of an allowance to move. They try to make it as cheap as possible. And that's when you find out, even when you're not moving that much stuff, how expensive it is to move anything. Like the pod storage, I kind of looked into that. It was so expensive. So by the time you're done moving a truck, just that was 3 hours, it was a couple grand. So
yeah,
it
really?
Gets really expensive. It gets expensive. After that, I moved to Louisville. So talk about even more expensive because you're moving further.
To Louisville
Kentucky.
Wow. Yeah.
I was there for 5 years, then went to Detroit, Michigan, and then went to New Hampshire, and then back home.
Is that it?
So, yeah.
So far.
Well, Connecticut in there too. But so, yeah, back home now where I'm close to my family and friends, which is great.
What else was in there too?
I was in Connecticut for a little bit too, but I would drive back and forth. So I would stay like in a hotel a couple days a week. But Connecticut to me is still, you know how we are. If it's like New Hampshire, Rhode Island, Maine, Connecticut, we're like, okay, that's still home.
They're close.
Yeah. So, but there's a lot of things that go into it, like with finances and trying to figure out cost of living in each new place. Like you might get offered a salary and it sounds amazing, but if you don't do the background work to find out what's the cost of living there, then it could really not be that great.
So I'm going to ask you to go backwards for quite a bit now. Well, not that long for you, but to when you decided you wanted to be in radio. Because what I'm thinking is that there may be young people listening to us who have decided this is their path in life, whether it's radio or something else. And maybe a parent or a loved one is saying, yeah, I don't know if that's the most stable thing. I'll use a musician as an example. You know, it's one of the common ones that people want to go into music and their parents say, you should be a lawyer. You should be a plumber. You should be a doctor because you're never going to have financial stability. So would you tell me a little bit about what that process was like for you when you were thinking about what you wanted to do for a career and somehow settled in radio?
Well, I think that for every kid that got told they talked too much in school, I think that's all the radio kids were the kids that got told that. So I wasn't really sure. I wanted to either be a lawyer because I like the debate part, or I wanted to write for Rolling Stone magazine. Like I wanted to follow the musicians around and write for Rolling Stone, almost famous, like my favorite movie. So I got into music and loved doing music and booking shows and kind of doing all of that. So really it was to find something where I could talk for a living.
Yeah. You know, you're just
Yeah.
making me think. Maybe you should just book our band. You can book my
I could
band.
do that. I could do that. I did that for years and years and put together shows and booked artists and did all that stuff
Fascinating.
because I worked on music stations. Yeah.
It is really always fascinating to me to do this kind of an interview, which is really what this is. This is us learning about Jess Tyler, my co-host, and the path that you've taken to get here. So those are very interesting choices, either a lawyer or writing for Rolling Stone magazine.
Yeah,
And you've
exactly.
come closer to one than the other, and we all know which one that is. So, what was it like to work on the country station? You worked on a country station for quite a while, right? On Wix?
Yeah, I worked at Kix and then I worked at Cat
Kix.
Country in Providence and then a country station in Louisville. I loved it because I've worked on, and I'm working on a rock station now as well, but I've worked in all different formats, and country was the best as far as being able to connect listeners with their favorite artist. You'd be able to get artists to come and do shows, especially at the beginning of their career. So, like Taylor Swift came to the station when she was 16 years old. So, I've known her for, almost 20 years now. Garth Brooks didn't come to the station, but I got to go to many events to see him. The late, great Toby Keith, I got to go to his house. Keith Urban, who is probably my favorite, I got to ride in his tour bus for a week and go from show to show. I was really good friends with his record person that managed him. So we just got to ride in the tour bus and it was amazing. So I've
For
had
a
some really
week.
amazing experiences. Yeah. We
Wow.
went all the different shows. Yeah. It was
All
really
right,
fun.
let me take a side road here then for a moment, because I know people watching this or listening to this will want to know that. Stories, please. What happened on a week in for a week with Keith Urban on a tour bus? What kind of memories come to mind?
Oh man, I would just say that my favorite memory of it, besides the fact that he walked around with no shirt and he's the best smelling man in the world, besides that, this was when Golden Road was coming out, which is a huge album for him. And before it had come out, he played it each song for us and told us like a little bit. It was just me and my friend Nancy, who was kind of his manager, and he told us about each song and why he wrote it. And so we got kind of like a preview before the world had heard the album. He'd probably played it for some other people, but it wasn't out yet. And so that was just an amazing memory. It was really fun. Although I don't know if I'm a curse or not, because the whole band got fired after that trip and he hired a new band. So I might be the curse, but I've got some really great pictures and some really fun memories. One of the most fun was he did Mohegan Sun, played Mohegan Sun, which is always a fun venue to go to.
Yes.
And it's just really cool kind of being with the band, like sitting on the sound stage and kind of getting that experience. Yeah.
So I'm interested in this because, of course, on radio and TV, we can't smell him. So you said he was the best smelling man in the world. Did you ever find out why, what he
No,
wore?
and I will say this, I'm not the only one to say this. Men and women alike say it. It's some kind of, I don't know if it's like pheromones, that's for women. I don't know what guys have, but he just smells great. And I'm sure what he has is some expensive custom-made cologne, but really, guys and girls alike all say the same thing when they meet him. Not only is he a nice guy, but everybody brings up how good he smells.
Can you imagine now there's somebody listening to this who's in advertising who's saying, I need him to sponsor my cologne.
I'm telling you, and it's great that guys will say it too. They're like, hey, I'll admit it. He smells good. And there's never a time he doesn't smell that good. So it was, yeah, pretty incredible.
And it may be a combination of things. Sometimes if people comment on my scent, they say, what is it? And I'll say, it's my clean cocktail. It's a perfume, it's my shampoo, it's my conditioners, whatever. It's this sort of mix of things that somehow is identifiable. Anyway, so I asked you about a country station, but is the pay different between different types of stations? If you worked for a jazz station, for instance, do they pay you more or
Oh,
less to work for?
no, I wouldn't say it goes by the genre of music for sure. If it's like, say, a small Christian station, it might be less than like a mainstream big station, but it really goes by market size. So it
Yes.
depends what market you're in, how many listeners you have. So when I was in Detroit, that was a major market. That was top 10 in the whole country.
Yeah.
Here is like, like a medium-sized market. But yeah, it depends on each market and it depends on each company. But the problem is there's not a ton of job stability, which I think is true in a lot of different fields. But the difference is, for example, I use my sister, which I do a lot. She's a nurse. So say something happened with her job, she could get a job anywhere and not have to move. But when you're working in radio, there's a limited number of stations, and those limited number have a limited number of positions, which are getting smaller and smaller over the years. So it's much harder to find a job without moving across the country.
Yeah.
And then that's when all the money comes in. You know, early on, like when I had moved from Springfield to Providence, there was like 6 months in between, and I cashed out like my 401k and then got stuck with that big 30% tax. And like just things you learn out along the way, like don't do that. At the time, I was like, okay, I've got to live on this. So I don't care about the 30%. There are probably other things I could have done, but I didn't know that at that age.
Yes. I want to talk to you more about, you know, the family situation, having to pick up kids and move, getting a divorce in the middle of all this. Anything you're willing to share with our listeners about how you continue to land on your feet financially, because you are very self-effacing, but I know for a fact you managed to land on your feet financially, despite the fact that you always talk about your sister is good with money and you're not.
Yes, she is.
Here you are with two healthy kids, you know, well-adjusted and all of that. So I would like to talk more about that. And in particular, something like when you're living in Detroit and you're getting paid more money and the market share is big, but it costs you more. Do you find that that is that's similar in lifestyle to living in a smaller market but having less expenses? And I really want to go into some detail about that in the second half if we could. But just before we go to break, and folks, can you tell we've turned the tables here? Before we go to break, can you tell me if there's one more thing you'd like to say to people that are listening about if you're trying to decide on a career and somebody's talking to you about money, what's your advice about that?
I mean, I think my advice would be to figure out something that you love to do and then not just say, okay, I'm going to go for that. Figure out a way to get paid to do whatever that thing is. So for example, if you love to talk, it might not be radio, but it might be a podcast. It might be a public speaker at different events. It might be you're working at a bank, but you're in charge of media and publicity, public relations. So there are different ways. Like if you can figure out and identify the one thing that's not going to make you feel like you're having to go to work every day, but figure out how to get paid for it, I think that you're going to win for sure.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. You can take us to break because that's your job. And and we'll come back and hear more about my co-host, Jess Tyler.
All right. Well, I want to get your phone number, of course.
Yeah. In this case, we're giving out my phone number, not Jess's.
Yes.
Although if you have questions, I will forward them to her. So my phone number is 413-773-3333 here at Hug Your Money.
Okay. You can also visit hugyourmoney.com. We'll be right back with more, I guess, of me coming up.
More of you and
Francis Ram. And the Money Doctor with Financial Fitness on WHMP.
Want to know what it would feel like to be financially unburdened? Let your HUG financial coach help you take a load off. Do it for yourself and for those you love. HUG Your Money. So unique, it's patented.
Welcome back to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram. And we're talking about me, which makes me nervous.
Welcome back to Financial Fitness. I'm Francis Ram, and this is my co-host, Jess Tyler, who has graciously agreed to let us peek into her life of radio with all of its financial drama, if you will, because of the turnover in radio. And I know that. I mean, we've been on the air 15 plus years, I think. And, you know, DJs have come and gone. General managers have come and gone. Salespeople have come and gone. PR people come and go. And sometimes stations come and go. We talked about Phil D, who had a station called The Wiz, an AM station called The Wiz, which the Saga stations bought and have relabeled as Pure Oldies that Jay Dean is on. And, you know, he's only the third voice for color that they've ever asked to be on that station in 40 years. But he's very proud of that because that never happens. So, you know, you bring up a point. It just doesn't have to be radio. It could be anything where you have to pick up and move. Certainly military personnel, they have it down. I mean, they just go.
This is they can pack up quick and go and start over. Yeah. I mean, I think it's harder on kids You know, definitely, especially in military families. I did not move when my son was little because I didn't want him to have to start a new school and be away from his dad. I will say I got divorced before I got into radio, so that made it easier. I didn't have to think about somebody else finding a job or, you know, because you got to take that all into consideration when you're deciding to move. But as I said before, with radio, most of the time you're going to be required to move.
Yeah. How old are your children now?
Well, I have my son who's older, and then my two grandchildren who are like my kids are 5 and 6.
I can't believe you have grandchildren. Nobody
yeah.
who sees this will believe you have grandchildren.
Well, I talk about them as like my kids all the time because they're with me all the time. So it's kind of like my second chance because I had Tyler so young. Yeah. So now I just have so much more patience. But yeah. When Tyler was little, I didn't move. I was in Springfield for 10 years. So he grew up on the radio with me. I brought him. He was under the production room board. I gave him a little sleeping bag and a DVD player. Anytime we had any kind of like skits that involved kids, like he went back to school shopping with Shaggy and, you know, Aww. Did all the little stunts and stuff for us. Went on stage. He used to sign his autograph, Tyler Tyler.
Oh,
cute.
That's so cute.
Yeah. But then once he got older, I was able to move. But it is harder. Like when you're figuring out when they're offering you a salary, you have to figure out the cost of living. You also have to figure out one thing I kind of forgot about is when you're away from home and have to fly back, how much it's going to cost you for airfare a couple times a year. Like all of these things affect your pocketbook a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. You have some tricks that you can share with people, like how you made ends meet when you had to.
Yeah. I will say that I've done this in almost every place that I've moved to. This is kind of my little trick that I do, especially if you can do something where it's like a one bedroom or a small two bedroom. I always like, for example, when I went to Detroit, I looked for the best zip code in Detroit that I would never be able to afford, which was Bloomfield Hills, kind of like the rich area of Detroit, about a half an hour away from the city. So I would look in those areas and then look for like a wealthier person who had a property that had either an apartment above their garage or a little house on the property and rented that. So I lucked out when this happened in Louisville. This happened in Louisville twice, happened in Detroit, happened in New Hampshire. All three of those times I found like an in-law apartment. So everything was included in the utilities and I paid one price and had like in Detroit and Bloomfield Hills, I had my own little house. It was down the end. So I never saw the people that owned the house. And I was in a zip code that was a zip code I could have never afforded. And it was really great.
What a sweet deal. And what a great tip. I think most people would not think to do that. They look for apartments. They look in the ads and they find out what's available. Do you think that your rent was more affordable because people who were well off didn't necessarily want to capitalize on it? They just wanted somebody in the apartment. Maybe they thought, you know, I'm renting to a single woman with a son. This is important to us to help out and we can do it.
Yeah, I think that if you present, like, I think it didn't hurt that I was on the radio in their area so they could listen to me. They knew who I was and they knew it wasn't going to be, you know, almost every place I've worked, I've done the morning show. So they knew I'm getting up at 3:30. I'm not going to be having raging parties at 1 a.m. So they felt good about that. So yeah, for sure. The little house that I rented, I paid $1,400, including everything besides cable. And could they have gotten $2,000 or $3,000 for that? For sure. For sure. Yeah. But a lot of people that are in that wealthier zip code don't want to deal with any problems. They just want to have it all contained. They didn't have to worry about like me getting the electric turned off or something like that because the utilities are included. So yeah, every place I've gone to, I've typed in when I'm looking on those sites, carriage house or in-law suite. And if you type in those two things, you'll find some little secrets that pop up.
Those are great. Yeah. That's a great tip. What's the first thing you do when you land in a new area? To get, you know, with a child, for instance, to get your bearings and kind of get a real sense for how much money you're going to have to spend monthly. I mean, now with the internet, you can do a lot of that in advance, but what is top priority for you when your boots hit the dirt?
Yeah, well, I will say the only place that I moved to with my son was Providence. So in that particular instance, I made sure that it was a good school. Like I moved to the area where it would be the good school district for him. Without him, which has been most of the moves, one of the main things, like one of the really great things about New Hampshire was there was no state income tax. So your check ended up being a lot better. So when you were figuring out how much the salary that factored into my decision where I maybe accepted a lower amount because I knew my take home was going to be more, I don't know if that was a smart financial move or not, but just that that factored in where some other places were, you know, not as great. So the first thing I do when I move, I should say this. The first thing I do when I move is I would go to any kind of rental site to look to see how much apartments in the good areas were going to be. That's the first thing I did when figuring out if, am I going to be able to even afford to do this? Am I going to be able to afford to fly home when I want to reasonably? Or am I going to be struggling and be away from family?
Yeah, well, you bring up a very good point about taxes. It's a thing that people ignore, even when they're house shopping. They'll say, well, this is how much mortgage I got approved for or pre-approved for. But they forget to add in their taxes, and that puts them over a limit, and then they end up in trouble. And the same is true of renting. I mean, some states, you have to pay tax on your clothing, right? Whereas other states, you don't. Some states, there's tax on food, more tax on some items than others. Excise taxes can be higher than others. Maybe your car insurance is going to cost you a lot more where you're going. So when we run these scenarios with young people, we teach them how to figure this out. We call it moving backwards. But it's moving backwards because what I want them to do is go on the internet, you know, look for a place, look for Detroit, Michigan, if that's where you're going to have to move, right? Or that's where you think you want to live. Then go get the statistics because they're all out there. They're all on government sites. What's the starting salary for somebody in your position in Detroit, Michigan? So you get that number. Then you say, what's the average cost of renting in Detroit, Michigan? And you get that number. And that, at least the rental number or the mortgage number and your income number is a good starting point, because what you're looking for is all of your debt. So your mortgage or your rent, where even though technically rent isn't debt, let's call it a living expense, your mortgage or your rent, your car payment, your credit cards, anything that is debt like that, you want to pay no more than one third of your paycheck before
which
taxes.
Is very difficult to do right now. It's with the cost of
taxes to cover
rent it. Or it's a lot harder. It used to be much easier to be at that number. Now I have talked to so many people that half their check goes to rent or mortgage.
Well, this is a complaint of mine from a long time, because when banks approve mortgages, it's done, and it's not really the bank's fault, right? But they do it right now on paper what the numbers look like, and then things change, right? You might lose a job or expenses might increase, inflation might be up, whatever it is. And that number that you were approved at initially no longer works. It's a moot point. And you don't get to say, well, wait, I want to pay, you know, 20% of my income for my mortgage payment. It is what it is. So I think that's interesting. One thing I would ask you about right now, because groceries are so expensive right now, did you do a little recon mission? I know when I moved here, I went to like every grocery store, not just for price, but where can I shop? What can I do? You know, who's open the right hours? Do they have the things I want? And how are their prices? Did you do like a little recon every place you went to find the stores that you liked best and factor that in?
100% did. Like, they have kind of the equivalent of an Aldi and then kind of the equivalent of a Whole Foods. So you kind of knew which one was going to be a little bit better pricing. The other thing that I did too, which is hard to do, especially if you're moving to a new area, you pick the places that look beautiful and that you'd love to live in. So for example, in New Hampshire, I would have loved to live in Portsmouth on the water, but I ended up picking Dover, which is still expensive, but it's not Portsmouth on the water expensive. Yes. So, you know, you might have to kind of drive around the area and figure out, like, yes, I would love to live here, but I'm going to be so tight, it's not going to be a fun place to live. I'm not going to be able to go out and do anything and explore. So that's kind of hard when you kind of have your head set on, this is my dream location or dream house or apartment, to really kind of be honest with yourself about what's life going to be like living there with no money.
That's a very important point, because if the reason you're doing this is to have, you know, a better life, and you're so strapped you can't have a cup of coffee, you're not going to feel very good about it. That's another good example. Now, I live in Montague City, 8 houses from the Greenfield line in Massachusetts. So my taxes are about half of what they are in Greenfield. Now, I don't have children, so the school system wasn't a factor for me or anything. I just found a house on the water that I liked and said, you know, that's an affordable price for me. But it's a big difference in taxes from me to 8 houses away. And yet I still have the same proximity to, you know, the major routes that I want to get on because it's convenient, all of that. I happen to have a house that backs up to the Connecticut River here, whereas in Greenfield, I might not be able to afford that or get that or want that. So mm-hmm. I think proximity and being flexible is really important, but that's probably the key point. And I want you to talk about this a little bit if you could before we end. When you have a job like you have, first of all, were you aware going into it how much you might have to move? And secondly, what does flexible mean to you? How do you decide what you have to do?
First question, no, I didn't think I would have to move this much. You know, I kind of thought if you're good at your job and, you know, you'll keep that job, but that's just not the way this business works. So flexible for me was, you know, am I willing to move somewhere on my own? You kind of have to make a whole new set of friends. You have to kind of adjust to not being around for every event at home or be able to go to things anymore or have that person that you like to go to things with. Like I like to bring my sister to stuff and I couldn't do that unless she flew out to see me. So you kind of have to adjust that. Right now, kind of a big reason why I'm back home, I've been offered other jobs or, you know, other places in the country, but it's do I want to give up being around family right now at this point in my life versus when I was 25? And right now it's a no. You know, I'd rather be here and not miss out on the things where maybe I'm not doing exactly what I want to be doing as far as booking concerts and doing all that kind of fun stuff anymore. But I'm still, you know, doing something that I love and I have the benefit of being around my family right now.
Yeah. You know, every time we talk, Jess, you say something that causes me to make a comment that is something I never thought I would say on the air at that moment. Right?
Oh, boy.
Every show is almost always a surprise, but you just brought out the financial coach in me with that statement about, well, I moved here for all these emotional reasons and I could come home and make a living, but I really, you know, I had to give up doing all that fun stuff like booking concerts. And the financial coach in me immediately was like, no, no, you don't have to give that up. Let's talk about that. And I really, when we get off the air, we really should talk about this because I think you could be doing both things. And if that would bring you enjoyment, it would certainly help out a lot of other people and put more cash in your pocket. That could be a big win-win for you. And I didn't know that you had that much experience at it, but clearly you do. And even if you didn't, if you were just a client that I was talking to who said, I had to give up something I really love to do to be able to move here, I would say, well, why? I mean, can we, maybe you have to be flexible again, right? Maybe you don't book Taylor Swift, but maybe you book, you know, some local bands that are really hot or something. And that's enough for you, you know, but yeah, the all or nothing thing is difficult. And I know that you value your sister very much. So in closing, I just would like to hear just one comment you have about your sister.
Oh gosh. In regard to what? Just anything?
Anything you want.
I will say that she is kind of the glue that keeps the family together. We lost both our parents, my dad very young and my mom, you know, about 15 years ago. And she's kind of kept everybody together, although it's a little bit more tough love. I like a little more soft love, a little more tough love from her. But I will say, you know, if you've got somebody in your life that will pick up whatever you're doing and, you know, move you to a different city or help you out if you need a plane ticket home, value that because that's just it's just a good thing.
Yeah, thank you. We always talk about money, but in closing, I'm going to just say the same thing I say all the time. Money is a means to an end. It isn't that it isn't important, but it should, in my opinion, be used to afford you the things that are important in life to you.
I hope this was interesting for people, and I hope I didn't bore them.
I doubt that anybody was bored, but I thank you very much for doing it because we really did have a totally different show planned. But when inspiration strikes, you just do it. So
awesome.
Thank you, Jess.
All right, well, let me get your phone number. You're welcome. Let me get your phone number.
Sure. It's 413-773-3333.
And you can visit hugyourmoney.com too for more information. And I think we're going to have questions next week, right?
We have questions this week, but we'll do them next week. You bet.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Jess. Would you like to see your business on Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor? We offer a 15-year proven track record. We have limited openings, but are currently seeking sponsors and guests. Is your business a good fit? We'd like to start a conversation. Contact us today at 413-773-3333
or info@hugyourmoney.com.
Have you heard about Get the Tea? It's an online herbal supplement company with high quality standards. You cannot find these in stores. They carry cleansing teas and targeted herbal supplements for all your health needs. Go to GetTheTea.com today to order yours. Health shouldn't be put off. It should be a priority. And check out their specials page for sale items. That's GetTheTea.com. Enter code TEA123 for 10% off exclusively for my listeners. GetTheTea.com, code TEA123. Order today.
This is Frances Rayum, the Money Doctor. Now you can become 100% debt-free, budget successfully, and retire well, all under the Hug Your Money umbrella.
Every Saturday morning, we used to sit at the table till like lunchtime when I'd be like, it's so beautiful out. Let's go do something.
I told you. I'm Kevin.
I'm Shannon. Believe it or not, it was me who wanted to do this, not him. He was very hesitant. I'm like, there's no harm in getting some advice.
And this thing is incredible.
He says it every time. I'll look at it and he's like, every time I hear the same thing. Wow, this is going to be paid off so fast. Oh my God, this is the best thing we ever did.
We make plenty of money between us, but that doesn't mean that we didn't need help.
Manage your debt, budget, and retirement. Hug works best when we work together. Schedule your free consultation with a Hug Your Money certified financial coach today. Visit HugYourMoney.com. Hug Your Money. So unique, it's patented.
Financial literacy and the human condition. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Rayum.
Welcome to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Rayum. Hi.
Hey, Jess, how are you?
I'm doing great. What are we going to be talking about today?
You know, we just had Father's Day,
mm-hmm.
and I have a little pet peeve about Father's Day.
Okay.
I think fathers are incredibly important, and yet Mother's Day, there's this huge fuss about, you know, mm-hmm. if you forgot to send your mother flowers or take her out to dinner or call her on Mother's Day, there would be a new world order, right? For most people.
Right.
Father's Day comes and it's like, hey, dad, have a burger.
Yeah. I will say, though, that if you ask probably 9 out of 10 dads, they could care less.
Yeah, I guess so.
I still think it's nice to acknowledge. Yeah. But I think that they don't get, you know, moms, we want our due presence.
Yeah. I would say even moms will be like, yeah, okay, you know, they appreciate me, but I'm a mom and that's what I do. So anyway, I wanted to talk about fathers, and I'm using this in this term in a very loose way. So it could be single dads. It could be two parent household dads. It could be stepdads. It could be mentors. Anybody that has acted in a fatherly way toward you in your life.
Yeah.
I would say, oh, I just got the chills saying that because my mind just went through several men who have taught me so much, not necessarily in a father role, but who kind of look out for people. They have that paternal instinct, right? We talk a lot about the maternal instinct. So they have that paternal instinct. And I have this small story to share with you. And then we can talk about what some other people have said their dads have taught them. And I would love to hear your slant on this, of course. But just yesterday and today, I've had this sort of ongoing experience with a person on Marketplace. And it's because this is a weird story, but I listed these two lithium batteries for sale that I thought were dead. Right?
Okay.
I thought they had died. I couldn't use them. So I didn't list them for sale. I said, if somebody could charge one of these up, if you can show me how to charge mine, you can have the other one for free.
Oh, that's a good deal.
They're an expensive battery. They were like $1,200 when they were in medical equipment, and now they're selling at about $100 a piece. So I thought, well, that'd be nice. If you just help me, you can have one for free.
Right.
And I got so many messages from people offering to help in some way, not saying, hey, I'll take your battery, not trying to swindle me, but genuinely trying to help. And this one man wrote, and he wrote back and forth, and he was a mechanic. And he taught me and even sent me a YouTube video that you just have to wake these things up a certain way. It was very simple. It didn't cost me a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they are both charging properly now.
I've got to say that I'm shocked.
Both those batteries.
I'm shocked by this. I'm on Marketplace a lot, and that is not usually my experience.
You know, it's really funny. It seems that if you offer things in a very human way, like I said, they're free. And then I said in the description, if you can charge one, you can have it for free if you can show me how to charge mine. And it's a very sort of human approach. And people were like, wait, no, don't give those away. You can fix those. Just do this.
Mm-hmm.
And there were three different men who wrote to me and said, try this, try that. And none of them wanted the batteries. They were all just trying to help. Mm-hmm. And I just thought that was the nicest thing. So I asked this man if I could use his name, and he was a little shy about it. So I won't use his name. I'll give you his first initial was F.
Okay.
And
okay. Now I'm going through
and that's
Fred,
all I'll give you his first.
Frank. Trying to think of other F names.
Oh, you can go through a bunch of F names, but
Francis.
I'm not going to tell you.
Okay.
Francis, right, is one of them, yeah. So anyway, I just thought that was the kindest thing to do for a complete stranger. I mean, he messaged me a bunch of times and I kept going back to him saying, I'm really sorry to bother you. But it reminded me of my own dad and how kind he was to people when he, complete strangers, you know, he didn't know them at all, but they needed help and he would do everything he could to try to help them, sometimes to a fault or, you know, at his own peril. But really, there's something about a real dad. You know, not necessarily your biological dad, but somebody who is a dad to you. And again, it could be a mentor. It could be anybody. It might even be, you know, a woman or somebody of another gender, but who fathers you in some way. So what I wanted to talk about is the kinds of things that we learn from them financially, right? About money. For instance, this battery story sounds crazy, but it just saved me a boatload of money replacing those batteries.
Yeah.
Because of something he taught me. And it was mostly encouraging me. Like I'm texting him saying, I'm afraid to blow this battery up. They told me it would blow up. And he's saying, just do it this way. This is going to be okay. And I went out with, you know, inspired by courage from him and did it. And they're charging right now perfectly. So I don't know. Tell me, do you mind sharing any story about your dad?
I will say that I feel like I missed out on a lot of that. My dad died early, not to be a downer. He was only 52. So a lot of those conversations I think we would be probably having now or, you know, in the past 10 or 20 years.
Yes.
But I do remember him. One thing that just sticks in my head from being younger is when I'd moved out of the house, he would always find my car because I'd have like loose change or money laying around in there. So he'd always like get on me to keep track of my money, to keep track of where it was, because he would always see it no matter where I was. It'd be something there. So that it just reminded me of that. And I just remember being younger and him always making sure that I had a couple dollars on me at all times for emergencies. So if I was going out, he'd slip me in a 5 or a 10 to be able to be okay.
Oh, that's sweet. That's really sweet. When I was researching what kinds of things people learn from their dads, I came across this article at debt.com. It was really interesting. They interviewed, I think, 16 financial professionals and said, what lessons about money did you learn from your dad? And Jordan Grumet from Earn and Invest said that his dad died very young also when he was 7 years old, which is the same age that my father's dad died. So that kind of got me. And the thing that his dad did that changed his life, even at that early age, is he left a life insurance policy. And that meant that his family could survive. And that, when I read things like that, I think, you know, when we buy life insurance, we never really think we're going to die, right?
Yeah.
Nobody really checks their own mortality and says, yep, I'm going to die. I better buy this life insurance. But we all will. And in that case, you know, he had a 7-year-old son and who knows if he had other children, but he was able to provide them with something that they could get by on. And then he goes on to say that a few years later, his mother remarried and his stepdad told him, taught him all kinds of things, including really strong and good financial habits, which he uses to this day.
Oh, that's
so
great.
Yeah, I think, you know, I don't want to be too categorical about this, but moms worry about things, you know, emotional sides of things and are you okay? And all the things that they want to raise a healthy, happy individual. And I think dads care about that. How would I know? I'm not a dad. I'm just supposing, right? They may care about that, but they see things differently than moms do. And I think often they're quieter about it. They lead by example more than telling you what to do. You know, again, my dad was a, you know, I've said this many times on the air. My family had no money. We were not, we were not poor. I mean, we were not wealthy. We didn't know we were poor. I would say we were in the lower middle class at best. And my dad had a series of sales jobs. He was always in some sort of sales, but he would change jobs often, very often. And sometimes we learn from our parents what you want to be, and sometimes we learn what you don't want to be.
Right.
And I think that my propensity to stay in the same industry for now 37 years came from, I don't want to keep changing jobs. However, there was something about the fact that he could do anything. You know, yes, he was in sales, but he would also wheel and deal stuff or do mechanical things or trade things with people to keep his family fed. And so I kind of learned about multiple streams of income from him, even though sometimes they were simultaneous and sometimes they weren't. You know, you learn to reinvent yourself from a parent like that, who is constantly saying, I have to start over again. What will I do now?
Right.
And who didn't want to be out of work. He was very prideful. So I think this will ring true for a lot of people's dads. Michael Taylor from Shifting Shares said that his dad was a tinkerer. And that he spent a lot of time failing at creating the perfect product, which meant that he learned, okay, there's no free lunch, he said. And he learned that if you fail, that's okay. You know, it takes how many no's to get a yes, or how many tries do you do before you succeed? Keep swinging the bat, you know, those kinds of things. So, you know, these are financial professionals like myself who say, you know what? I didn't wake up today knowing what to do with money.
Right.
Somebody taught that to me in some way. And it probably came early and it probably came by example. You know, as a mom, that if you tell your kids something, you know, I want you to do it this way because it's the best way to do it, but you yourself do it a different way,
right?
Which one are they going to follow?
Yeah, for sure. And they're watching really closely, even when you think that they're not.
Yeah. And they are like little sponges, right?
Yeah.
There was a couple of women in this interview as well. One was Melanie Hansen from EDI Refinance. And she basically said, look, you know, without my dad, even though my mom encouraged me to go to college, it was my dad that encouraged me to pay attention to my debt.
Yeah.
So she said, yeah, she went to college, but she would have graduated in much worse financial shape if it weren't for her dad saying, you got to stay on top of this stuff. You know, you got to get earn extra money or do what you can to pay those loans down. I thought that was an interesting one. Yeah. You know, you mentioned that your dad died young, and it's so sad and when that happens, because whenever your parents leave, if you had a good relationship with them, they leave a big hole, even if you didn't have a good relationship with them, you know, and to miss that is difficult for some people. But, you know, there's so many different ways you can learn from your parents, and what they teach you and what they choose to teach you is so important. Just as an example, my dad was 49 when I was born. So that's the age of most of my peers' grandparents.
Right.
So when I was going to school, even though they were my parents and they were very youthful, they were born in times that my other student friends didn't understand. So, you know, my dad, I mean, you're going to, people out there are going to start doing the math. How old is this woman anyway? She's like Methuselah. She talks about 37 years and how old could she possibly be? So my dad was born in 1916.
Oh.
It still boggles my mind when I think that. 1916. Imagine what the world was like in 1916.
Well, yeah, and then he lived through the Great Depression too.
Yes, but he wasn't, But he wasn't born in 1940s, like most people my age's parents were, 1945, for instance. I am the last year of a baby boomer. You know, so when you, the last possible year for baby boomers. So if you really care out there, 1963 was when I was born. You can do the math yourself. But it meant that he had a different set of values. You brought this up exactly the right way. Lived through the Depression as a young person, right? His parent, his mother, his father, of course, fell off a roof at, when my dad was seven and died right at my dad's feet. Now that will, as you know, make a mark, you know, and so at 7 years old, like this other gentleman, Jordan, my dad was the man of the family.
That's a lot of pressure.
An immigrant mom who spoke broken English and three sisters.
Wow.
So they pulled him out of school to get a job and support the family.
At seven?
At seven.
Wow.
And he did. So that will tell you that you talk about a work ethic. That's trial under fire right there. He got a job on an ice wagon. We don't even have, I mean, of course we don't have ice wagons, but imagine an ice wagon where they would go and deliver the ice, right? Suddenly I feel like a little like Bill Cosby. We went up, you know, we've walked to school uphill both ways, right? but this is a true story. So, you know, he became a modern man. He always was trying to learn. He always was trying to get cutting edge information. He was very curious. Probably one of the biggest traits that I think I got from my dad was that curiosity and wanting to fix something, wanting to find a problem and fix it, which is why I do what I do for a living, right? I don't care what the problem is. I will try and listen to you,
right,
and find solutions. I it's inherent in me. But I think it's because both my parents had to do that. So, you know, as my dad was the age of my grandparents, you know, of other grandparents, I mean, you know, he saw things differently and I had a different set of skills from him. So, you know, that's true also of a very young parent. You learn things differently. They're maybe more playful and they're more of a friend than a real parent. And so I, you know, fathers are really important. We should talk in the second half about the kinds of things other financial advisors were taught by their parents. And I would love to know if anybody wants to write in comments. We always ask for questions, but if they want to write in comments or stories about their dads, I'd love to do a follow-up show on this sometime. I just think what we learn from our parents is so important.
Can I get your phone number for everyone out there?
No.
You have to give it out.
Okay, I will. 413-773-3333.
And you can go to hugyourmoney.com. We'll be right back with the second half of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram on WHMP.
Every day, financial ads claiming to be different from the competition. Are they? I'm Francis Ram, the Money Doctor, and I'm about to make a bold statement. I believe the thing to focus on isn't their uniqueness, it's yours. No one has the same financial situation or needs as you, and no one can help us help you better than you. But the truth is, when it comes to managing money, most of us are not as successful as we'd like to be. No matter how focused we are, it's almost impossible to separate emotion, and being in a relationship can further compound the issue. That's why I developed Hug Your Money. Financial coaching, coupled with online software and tools to empower you to manage money wisely. We guide you every step of the way to resolve immediate issues and plan for your financial future with modeling scenarios. So whether it's debt, budget, retirement planning, or a financial crisis, having a HUG coach in your corner is like having a new best financial friend. HUG Your Money is as unique as you are. In fact, it's patented. Visit HugYourMoney.com.
Welcome back to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram. We were talking about our fathers and their advice with money. And also, we were talking off air, and you were saying that you think there's a different relationship between dads and daughters and mothers and sons.
I think that's true. I certainly, my brother, you know, felt a different kind of relationship with my father, I think, than I did.
Right.
And or than my other sisters did. And each sibling, of course, has a different relationship with their father. But, you know, I really wanted to do this on the tail end of Father's Day because it comes and goes in a flash and then, you know, dad's off doing whatever. But all the things that dads do that they don't make any fanfare about, you know, they're not going to say, hey, I fixed your car 17 times and what are you going to do for me lately? They just go, okay, you know, her car's broken down. I'll just go and fix it.
Right? Yeah, they take care of it.
Yeah. And if they're not mechanically inclined, they seem to find somebody else to do it. I mean, even getting like a AAA membership for you is a lovely thing that maybe a dad might do and maybe a mom might not.
Right.
I mean, I'm a very modern woman. There are lots of, I buy my own AAA membership, right? Lots of people of all genders would do this. But because dads are more common to, I think it's more common for dads to do those kinds of things. I think it's important to talk about. I remember as a little girl, so I'm a very bad carpenter. Mm-hmm. I can do lots of other hands-on projects, but for whatever reason, I am not good with wood and I know it.
Okay.
Now, it might be because what I learned from my dad about carpentry was that my job was to sit on the board. You sit on the board while I cut the board, or you stack the cordwood, right? So, you know, some people would take somebody and say, okay, this is how you do it. Mm-hmm. You know, this is how you set up a miter joint, or this is how you router something out. And you might learn a lot from that. But my dad was not a particularly great carpenter, but when he was doing something and I was very curious and interested, my job was always to sit down, shut up.
Make sure you're pointing the flashlight in the right direction.
Yes. And I don't do sit down and shut up so well these days. So I didn't learn that lesson very well. But anyway, you know, we were talking about a gentleman who had an immigrant parent. You see that I was talking about my dad having an immigrant mom, and you see these differences from people, cultural differences, when people come from other countries and they bring to the table a set of values that are not American. Now, you might think that's good. You might think it's bad. I don't care which you think it is. It's different.
Yeah, I think the image in my head is that from other countries, the man is more the leader of the family, where here it's really 50-50.
I think that's true in a lot of countries. I mean, I'm sure it's changing, but I just think that the economic impact in, say, a third world country,
right,
is so much different. I recall years ago when we were doing the Money Doctor show on GCTV, I had one of my favorite interviews was the couple that owns Alina's restaurant in Hadley, Mass.
Oh, so good.
Yeah, the restaurant's great, but his story is even better. And so he comes from, I think the DR, I hope I'm right about that. But anyway, he tells us, it was a combination interview of him in the studio with his wife and also at the restaurant live. And in the studio, she was so supportive of him while he told his story. And his story was, I bought my first pair of shoes on time payments. And you could see him cry in the video. And I just thought, wow. Now, you know, here we're complaining that the kids can't get a cell phone until they're 12 because the parents can't afford it or something. His first pair of shoes on time payments. Mm-hmm. And he didn't have them until I think he was 7 years old before he had a pair of shoes.
Wow.
Something like that. So those kinds of stories, you know, will come with people and they do things differently. So Mark Chen, who from Bill Smart, said that he had an immigrant father and he taught him to be curious and he taught him to do his homework. Mm-hmm. And he said, if you do your homework on things, on stocks and other things, if you do your homework, you can make good gains and shave years off of your retirement. Mm-hmm. So that's what he learned from his dad. Darren Colanani, I hope I've done that right. Darren Colanani from Centurion Wealth Management said his dad taught him to pay everything with his credit card. Mm-hmm. I know you're shivering right now, to build credit and to make sure to pay it off every month. But more importantly, the importance of savings. Mm-hmm. So he taught him to open a savings account, and every time he got money for a birthday or holiday, to put the money in the savings account. And so that was a great lesson for him. Anthony Martin from Choice Mutual said he was taught at a very young age when he was making an entry-level salary, and it seemed completely futile to save anything because he had all this student debt.
Right.
So he had an entry-level salary, a lot of student debt, and no money. And his father taught him, you may feel futile, but put $50 a month away. Mm-hmm. And that has now turned into thousands of dollars. But more importantly, the habit that he learned was to increase his investments.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this is, you know, these are people who do what we do for a living, right?
I was thinking, I thought of another one that my dad said, and we kind of touched on this before, but was always to be financially independent, to not depend on a man. And that's always stuck with me. Like I've always, even when I was married, I kept my money separate and paid my own bills, but that stuck with me for sure.
What an interesting slant. Now, if you take that same comment, my parents said the same thing. You don't want to have to depend on anybody. They didn't necessarily say a man, but you don't want to depend on anybody financially. Take that same comment that your father made. Make sure you're financially independent so you don't have to depend on a man.
Mm-hmm.
And think about what he might have been thinking. And then flip it to a mom telling you the exact same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Make yourself financially independent so you don't have to depend on a man. They probably had different ideas of what that meant, different perspectives, right? The father might have felt, I'm just supposing, maybe he felt like, you know, life would be easier for me as a man if I didn't have to support, you know, all these women who aren't financially independent, right? Not your dad necessarily, but in general, a man might be looking at it from that perspective, like, hey, I just want to live my life and worry about me too, but I have to support these other people who are not financially independent. Whereas a mom or a woman might be thinking, you know, you don't want to be beholden to somebody because you don't want to be in a bad relationship because you can't leave because of money.
Yeah.
Right?
On my dad's side, I definitely think that it's more like, and this might be with dads and daughters, the way that I took it was like, once he's not around to protect me anymore, he wants to make sure I could take care of myself because he's not there as the backup for the other guy. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think you're probably right, nail on the head. What is it? You hit the nail on the head, yes. I think you're probably right about that. And I'm sure that that's one of the things that I think leads to the kinds of lessons we're talking about is the protectiveness of a dad or a father figure. in some way, to just watch out for the people in their lives, whether they're daughters or sons or, you know, friends or relatives. I mean, how many times has a neighbor, you know, maybe not in the big cities, but if you're in a small town, some neighbor has probably come to your aid at some point, mm-hmm. or you have gone to theirs.
Yeah.
And they're just a neighbor. They're just the person that lives next door. You didn't choose to put them there. You don't have a working relationship with them necessarily, but you know, if you need help, somebody will come and ask you for help, or you can offer help. And that can be, you know, a lovely thing to do, but it can also be very fatherly in some ways, mm-hmm. right? Like this guy, you know, writing to me about the batteries. What a funny thing to do. There was one that I thought was a particular standout. Sean Plummer from The Annuity Expert said that his father taught him this lesson about money. $1,000 is a lot of money to spend, but it's not a lot of money to have.
That's true.
It's kind of deep.
Yeah.
But it's kind of true, right? That's, to me, that was one of the standout comments. There were many others, if anybody wants to read the article, of course, but that was a standout comment to me because, you know, people tend to blow money. Like they blow $5 on a coffee. I always pick on coffees. I don't know why, because it's an easy one, easy target. Blow $5 on a designer coffee, but they'll complain about the fact that it cost them $10 to wash their car. Mm-hmm. Well, that's two coffees.
Yeah,
you can make
true.
Two coffees at home, wash your car, right? I mean, there's always things like this that you can take a look at. But $1,000 is a lot of money to spend. You know, if you're thinking about, I'm going to buy a new refrigerator and it's $1,000, you're thinking about it. Mm-hmm. Most people are thinking about that. Like, gee, I don't really want to spend that money. But if you only have $1,000 in emergency cash reserves, mm-hmm. you're thinking, I don't have enough. I need to save money. So the advice there, the lesson there really is to think about, every time you're looking at a big purchase like that, can you buy it for less? Can you solve the problem for less? And can you save some money and build up those cash reserves? All right. So there were two more that I thought were fairly common, but really valuable lessons. So Matt Carter, who is a business law attorney from Inc. and Go, mm-hmm. said that his father taught him as a very young attorney, when he wasn't making a lot of money and all of that, to start putting money away in his 401k. And that made a difference, of course, in his life. And it would be easy when you're not making much money to say, well, when I make more money, especially as something like an attorney where you know probably every year your income's going up, you mm-hmm. know, to say, well, I'll start my 401k later. But he had him started as a young attorney. And I thought that was really, you know, getting going early was really important.
So interesting, too, though. I'm wondering how many families or how many dads have like a money talk? Like you always hear about the sex talk for kids. But is there a money talk, or is it like little bits of advice as you go along, or as you were saying, you kind of see what they're doing themselves? But I wonder if it is important to sit down and have a money talk.
Well, that's a great point. I mean, it would be, of course, the advisor in me says, yes, let's have a money talk, right? Mm-hmm. But I'm not sure what children get out of that. They may take a part or two away, a piece or two away from it. And it might have some gravity that somebody sat down and said, okay, we're going to have some lessons along the way, but you just need to understand one of the important things that I want you to learn in life is about money. And if you have any questions about money, you know, you don't have to think I'm good at it, mm-hmm. but come to me and ask, and we'll find an answer together. We'll get somebody who knows if I don't know. But, you know, of all the things you do, money is going to be in the way a lot if you're right. not good at it. I recently met a young man at a big box store locally. And he works there in the summers, and he's studying economics at Holy Cross. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, it's such a great choice. He said, I don't know what else I would charge, what else I would take at a liberal arts college. And he said, so I took economics at Holy Cross. And I said, you know, it's a great choice because even if you don't go into that field directly, you've learned a lot about how the world works when it comes to money, you know, maybe on a macro level. Rather than a micro level, but it's still useful information. Mm-hmm. I would say Dave Anderson, who is the founder of BMO GAM Viewpoints, which is a thing I don't know, actually, I have to say. Do you know that?
Mm-mm. I know it's a mouthful.
No. Yeah, well, I'm not even sure I'm saying it right. But anyway, Dave Anderson, who is that founder, said that his father taught him to be like a squirrel. Be like a squirrel, put money away. Every mm-hmm. time you have a little bit, put it away somewhere. So there was a lot of lessons in this article about saving, not so much about spending. Nobody I read said, yeah, my father told me not to buy anything, mm-hmm. you know, But they, which is interesting because how do you save if you're spending like crazy, right?
Right.
So there might be a piece of the puzzle missing there a bit, but I just found it so heartwarming. And I want to thank all the people out there who father somebody in some way, because it does make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
When you're feeling like it's not making a difference, it's probably one of those times that they're really learning from you.
Yeah, you think no one's listening, but they actually are. All right, well, let's get your phone number.
Sure, it's 413-773-3333.
And you can go to hugyourmoney.com anytime. Thank you so much. We'll do this again next week.
Thanks, Jess. Have you heard about Get the Tea? It's an online herbal supplement company with high quality standards. You cannot find these in stores. They carry cleansing teas and targeted herbal supplements for all your health needs. Go to getthetea.com today to order yours. Health shouldn't be put off. It should be a priority. And check out their specials page for sale items. That's getthetea.com. Enter code TEA123 for 10% off exclusively for my listeners. Getthetea.com, code TEA123. Order today.
This is Frances Rayum, the Money Doctor. Now you can become 100% debt-free, budget successfully, and retire well, all under the Hug Your Money umbrella.
I'm Shannon. I'm from Greenfield.
I'm Kevin. I'm from Franklin County. When Shannon first mentioned it, I was like, no, no, no.
I said, honey, your profession is your profession, and you are amazing at it, and it involves being in control of a lot of things. I said, but sometimes you have to let control go to somebody who knows more in a different area. And I said, she is professional. She knows about finances. So let's let her help us. And then when we left your office that day, he was like, holy crap. I'm so glad you made me do that.
Debt, budget, retirement. Hug works best when we work together. Schedule your free consultation with a Hug Your Money coach today. Visit hugyourmoney.com. Hug Your Money. So unique, it's patented.